The hipster of Tower Grove South texts again, I find it's way more helpful to ask the Twin Peaks waitresses what year their stepdad graduated high school and if he's still with their mom. Yeah. That sounds like that might be a little more productive than actually hitting on the waitress.
You know what's undefeated? Daddy issues.
There you go. You're right about that. Joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line is the host of the Hall of Fame show on the NFL channel on Sirius XM. And starting this Sunday morning, you can catch him with Mark Littlebridge on Sunday Football Kickoff. You can follow him on Twitter at HBalzer721. H, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Mr. Berger. How are you doing this evening?
Doing fantastic because I got a fantasy football draft tonight, and we are just a couple hours away, what is it, 48 hours away from the kickoff of the 2017 NFL season. I'm really excited. Howard, you got to be like a kid at Christmas.
Yeah, this is a great time of year. Obviously, it's a little still bittersweet here in St. Louis, but hey, it is the NFL, it is football, and it's sure better to have football. At least it's better to have a football season than not have a football season, whether you have a team or not. And the NFL, with all its crazy angles and crazy storylines and compelling teams and compelling players, and it's just the league that keeps on giving and giving and giving. And now it'll be good, though, that we can finally have some actual games to talk about.
Well, last year, the most intriguing story, at least around here going into the 2016 NFL season, was how the Rams were going to do. Everybody wanted to hate watch the Rams, and there are still people who are going to hate watch the Rams going into this season too, and probably will every year as long as Stan Kroenke owns the franchise. But for you, what is the most interesting story, the most intriguing story going into this 2017 season?
Wow, I don't know if there is just one. That's the great thing about it, because you can just, you know, find so many throughout the league and with different teams. And, you know, certainly front and center, I think, just what's going on obviously now with the Cowboys. And I did hear late today, I don't know if there's anything, you know, I've been in a meeting for the last hour, but I did hear that apparently it's been decided that Ezekiel Elliott will in fact play on Sunday night for the Cowboys against the Giants, even if something would be decided in the next couple of days. But how that plays out, obviously, is going to have tremendous impact on him, on the Cowboys, on the teams that they play, and all that. And obviously, that could have a big effect on that division. So, you know, that's just one thing. But you know, with a lot of the young quarterbacks, I'm very intrigued by that. You know, around the league, where you know we see DeShone Kizer starting for the Browns. Not that that's going to be a huge thing overall, because, you know, the Browns would be probably happy if they won four or five games. But, you know, we see these younger quarterbacks coming in and playing, and Trubisky, you know, what's going to happen to him in Chicago. So, that's an interesting story. You know, I think in terms of teams on the rise, I'm very curious, you know, about the Buccaneers and how good they can be. I think they put together a pretty talented football team there. And so that's a story. But like I said, I don't have just one that I look at and say, oh, that's the one I'm most interested in, because there are just so many of them that are, to me, very intriguing.
I think the most intriguing story is going to be who's going to challenge the New England Patriots in the AFC, because the AFC East has already pretty much been conceded to the Patriots this year. I mean, they might as well not even play the divisional games. The Jets and the Bills are both tanking. The Dolphins, they may surprise the people with Jay Cutler, but you never know. But the AFC East, if the Patriots don't win that, then that means that the whole team was taken hostage someplace. So in my opinion, it's going to be who's going to step up in the AFC and challenge the Patriots. Is it going to be the Pittsburgh Steelers? Now they have Le'Veon Bell back for the full year. They have Martavis Bryant back from suspension as well. Is that offense going to, you know, the offense is going to be good enough. Is that defense going to be good enough? With Oakland, I mean, that offense may be Oakland may have the best offense in the NFL, but that defense, I think the defense is going to be really bad in Oakland this year, so it's going to be nothing but shootouts. You're talking about young quarterbacks, DeShone Foster in Houston. I think Houston is just one great quarter, like, I wouldn't even say great, one good quarterback away from being a very serious Super Bowl contender when you look at how good that defense is and the skill position players on offense. The Tennessee Titans, do they take another step forward? To me, that's the most intriguing story going into the season, is who's going to challenge the Patriots in the AFC.
Yeah, and a big picture view, I think you're definitely right in terms of, you know, that conference. And I think with you know, with the Texans, I mean, this is a team that's made the playoffs with a, you know, a roller coaster variety of quarterbacks over the last few seasons. And like you said, they don't need a great quarterback. They just need a pretty good one that, you know, can make some key plays and get that team from a 9-win team to perhaps an 11-win team where, you know, maybe they get a bye. You know, maybe they get an off week, but that they are more capable in the postseason of rolling off some wins. And so I think the teams you mentioned, I think Pittsburgh probably, when you look at the teams right now on paper, and especially with the Steelers picking up Joe Hayden to come into that secondary, and obviously all the, you know, a lot of these teams are going to lose players during the year, and I certainly we can't predict that. But looking at where these teams are now, I would probably say that the Steelers are the biggest challenger to the Patriots if they play the way that they are capable of. Now that's all dependent, Matt, on Le'Veon Bell staying healthy, and he's been banged up. He's been a little nicked the last couple of years, and now he shows up, you know, this week basically to start practicing to get ready for a season opener. And does he start getting some injuries now? Does not being around football for as long as he hasn't been around, does that affect him? And that remains to be seen. If it doesn't, then I think the Steelers they might be the best team that can challenge the Patriots. I think the Raiders, you talk about the defense, there's no doubt that can get them in trouble in postseason games. I think the Chiefs are very, very intriguing. Because you know they're going to win 10 or more just from the way they play, and you know they're a team that doesn't make mistakes, and last year they tied for the NFL lead with a plus 20 turnover ratio, and when you have that, you're going to win a lot of games. The question is, can they win games in the postseason with Alex Smith at quarterback? But they do have some interesting talent around him with Tyreek Hill getting an expanded role. But the big question there is the rookie. You know, rookies, I think, are going to be a big story in the league this year, too. I talked about young quarterbacks. You know, Kareem Hunt, can he do the job consistently for the Chiefs? Can Dalvin Cook in Minnesota, have the Vikings to be back where they were two seasons ago with another team that has a real good defense? So some of these young running backs, can Joe Mixon in Cincinnati have the Bengals, you know, competing with the Steelers in that division. So all of those things, I think, are going to be, you know, very interesting to watch. And all of them, of course, could affect your fantasy draft tonight.
You're right about that. It's a keeper league. And last year I had Le'Veon Bell and Ezekiel Elliott, and I had to pick my keepers. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to keep Bell, and I'm going to keep Ezekiel Elliott. And I'm like, if Elliott gets suspended, then I'll just have to find somebody who's going to replace him for however many games that he is suspended. But Rocchio just gave me a look when I told him that I had Le'Veon Bell and Ezekiel Elliott last year. Yeah, I got lucky.
Yeah, I thought you were telling me that the rules, you can only keep one of them. And I was going to be like, which one did you take? Which one did you
no,
take?
No, 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 I kept them both.
No, that's a very – it's not a bad base.
No, of course not. Sticking with the NFC, Howard, I think the NFC is a complete and total crapshoot. I think there are several teams in there that could emerge from there and represent the conference in the Super Bowl. Obviously, I like the New York Giants a lot in the NFC East. I love what they've done on offense. That defense is still going to be pretty good. I mean, I guess the biggest question mark that the Giants are going to have is that running game, and that's it. But when you look at the weapons that Eli Manning has on offense, I think the running game is going to be kind of secondary. You can always do a running back by committee and get by with that. Obviously, you have the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers. I think Aaron Rodgers is looking to cement himself as the best player in the NFL. I think that he probably felt like he should have won the MVP last year over Matt Ryan. So I think Aaron Rodgers is going to come out like gangbusters. And then in the NFC West, I think you're going to have a dogfight between Arizona and Seattle. And then the NFC South is always going to be tough between New Orleans and Atlanta, Carolina, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So I think the NFC is just about as wide open as it's going to get.
I agree 100%, and I've said this at different places in different interviews that I've done, and I've said that whichever six teams get into the playoffs in the NFC, you could probably make a case for any one of them winning the Super Bowl, whether they're a wild card or the team with the first round bye and has the best record at home field advantage throughout. I think that's how close it is. Now, granted, whatever six teams they are. We don't know how they entered the playoffs, you know, how healthy are they at that time. But I think that's how close a lot of these teams are. But I would favor in the playoffs the teams that either A, do have that running game, have balance in your offense, or play really good defense. And I think that balances. Now, the running game, if you have the real good running game like Dallas does, then a lot of times that can mitigate or lessen the issues that you have on defense because you can stay on the field, you can control the clock, and so it makes the defense look a little bit better than it truly is. And so that can balance that out. But you look at Green Bay, you mentioned the Giants. I think that it doesn't affect them. It won't affect them as much during the season, but if they make the playoffs, I think that's where you could, you know, get into some problems if you can't run the ball and you're not that good on defense. I think Seattle is a similar team in that regard also. They've got all these running backs that can't stay healthy. And so what will happen with them? I do think getting Sheldon Richardson was an unbelievable move for that team because I think his abilities fit perfectly that scheme that they have there. But you mentioned Arizona. Arizona was my Super Bowl pick in the NFC last year.
Same here.
And obviously that turned out they didn't even make the playoffs. But they lost a lot of strange games. A lot of things didn't go their way. But all of a sudden in this league, you turn four close losses and weird ways that games ended. You turn four of those into wins, and it's a whole different feeling about your team. And I think they've got a real good chance to bounce back. But they experienced some losses from that defense. So I'm not sure if they're going to be as good defensively as they have been. So, hey, we start finding all out about it all this week, and that's what's fun about this league because it can take you in so many different directions.
Howard Balzer joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line. You can follow him on Twitter at HBalzer721. Howard, our friend Vinny Bonsignor from the LA Daily News is reporting that rookie Tanzel Smart gets a start for the Rams at defensive tackle. It sounds like they are not going to have Aaron Donald on the sidelines and in uniform for the game on Sunday against the Colts. Can you really blame Aaron Donald for what he's doing, considering they gave Tavon Austin all that money, and he's just Aaron Donald's like, look, I've outplayed my rookie contract. I want a better deal. I can't say I blame him.
Well, but here's the thing, and the one thing we don't know is what kind of deal is he asking for, because just by virtue of the we all assume and presume, and I think it's true, that the Rams are negotiating. So if there is negotiating, that shows that the Rams are willing to do something about that contract. But is Aaron Donald and his agent asking for something so outrageous and so outlandish that there's no way that the Rams or any team in their right mind would agree to it? Perhaps that's the issue. But we don't know because none of that has been reported. That's all behind closed doors. And it leads me to believe, though, that that's what this is about. There's something going on there that, as good as Aaron Donald is, he's a defensive tackle. And as good as a defensive tackle as he is, what's the Rams' record been when he has been there? And so that doesn't take away anything from his ability. But the flip side is, does that mean that you just roll out the Brinks truck and just give him whatever he wants or whatever his agent is asking for? So that's the one thing about it. No, I don't have any problem with a guy trying to improve himself. No doubt about it. But I think sometimes the way you also do it is you are there. You report to the team. You are under contract. You sign that contract. And you are violating your contract right now. We see in Houston, here's an interesting, you know, an interesting situation. Dwayne Brown, their starting left tackle, has not reported either. Hardly anybody talks about him. He wants a new contract. Well, the Texans in the last week or so have given out four or five new contracts to players that are under contract, and three or four of them was decent money, but not huge deals. They gave a break the bank deal to DeAndre Hopkins. Well, what was the one common thread from all those guys? They're all there in camp. They all reported. They're all working with their team. They're all getting ready to play a football season. Dwayne Brown is not. And so I think a lot of teams, you know, feel that way. Hey, you know, come here and, you know, be here, and then you know, we're more apt to take care of you. And so while yes, I understand the situation, and I don't begrudge any player getting what he can, but if you're also expecting some crazy deal that is just unbelievable, then that has to be taken into account. We don't know it, but I think it's a fair assumption to think that what they are asking for is something. Because like you said, you know, they gave Tavon Austin, you know, and I thought that was a crazy deal that they gave him. You know, they franchised Trumaine Johnson, you know, 2 years in a row. He's going to make something like, I don't know, close to $30 million in two seasons on his franchise tag. So they've made those decisions. But with Aaron Donald, they can't come to an agreement. So like I said, that tells me that what they've been asking for is something that even the Rams must be shaking their heads at and saying, you're nuts.
Well, maybe Aaron Donald's like, look at those morons just throwing money away all over the place. I better get in before they wisen up.
Well, but here's the thing. We don't know what they offered. You know,
that's true.
I'm sure that the Rams offered a very nice deal. I mean, I can't imagine they're lowballing Aaron Donald. You know, and so that's the thing. So yeah, I again, the Rams haven't gained. You know, if the Rams are taking the attitude, no, we're not even going to talk. Well, then you have a real problem. But they're talking. They're talking. So, like I said, the question comes down to what are they talking about? I remember a few years ago when they were still here, and this is not Aaron Donald. You know, the Aaron Donald world. You know, Joe Barksdale, if everyone remembers,
yeah,
pretty solid right tackle. Didn't miss a game. Hardly ever misses a game. And he became an unrestricted free agent, and he thought he was going to break the bank. And he came in asking for a ridiculous deal for a guy of his ability. And the Rams offered him a good contract, and he said no. He said no, and he wouldn't sign, and he wouldn't sign, and he wouldn't sign. And nobody else was offering him money either. He was unrestricted free agent. No one else was offering him anything either. And then finally he signed with the Chargers sometime in June, as I recall, on a very, very low market deal that wasn't anywhere close to what the Rams had been offering him. So not a very good move by Joe Barksdale and his agent at that time. So, you know, those are the things about these negotiations that we all, you know, look at from the outside. We don't know what's going on behind closed doors or on the telephone lines or in emails or however they're communicating. And so I think that, I've given my point on it, and I think that's really at work here in terms of what they are seeking.
Obviously, they're working on it, but is it odd to you at all? And this just kind of popped in my head. You know, excuse me if this is a little short sighted. Is it odd to you at all that we haven't heard any rumors or reports from the usual people who, I mean, we know they're getting their information from either the agent or somebody within the Rams front office, but that's the stuff we haven't seen yet. Is it a little shocking to you that it's been this long and yet we haven't had any kind of leak that is supposed to be kind of, you know, setting the story up in that way?
Well, I've heard a couple of things, and not about money specifically, but I don't know how true they are, but it hasn't been a lot out there, and that means that the agent isn't floating a whole lot.
Yeah,
because and sometimes that can mean that he doesn't want anybody to know the crazy stuff he's asking for. And the team doesn't want to put it out because then that can really muddy the waters in trying to get a deal done. So I think that's why there's quiet, because the Rams want to get a deal done with this guy. A couple things I've heard, though. One is that some people are saying, I mean, I've heard numbers thrown out that, well, is it really worth to pay a defensive tackle $20 million a year? And some of, you know, opine that that's perhaps what he's looking for in a five-year contract. I heard a rumor that he wants the entire contract guaranteed, the whole thing guaranteed.
Then, good luck with that.
Another one. I'm sorry. Go ahead. What's
I
that?
Said good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly. Then there was another one that I saw that I wasn't quite clear on what it really meant. You know, something like maybe he's looking for that he'll be guaranteed free agency when, you know, in 2 years or 3 years or something like that. That he doesn't want, and so that could be a hang up. He gets an extension. And maybe the Rams are offering, you know, huge money for the next 2 years, but Donald doesn't want to be franchised. He wants an agreement not to be franchised. So there could be all kinds of little quirks like that that are part of this that, while on the surface don't seem that important to the team or whoever, it can be very important in terms of giving away some of your rights in negotiations. And so it could be all of that. But there hasn't been a lot. There hasn't been a lot about it. A, because it's a defensive tackle, and as good as he is, he's a defensive tackle. And so I think that's, you know, that's what's driving this thing. And I'll tell you, I really wonder how good that defense is going to be. I think their offense is going to be better. Of course, it can't be worse from what it's been, but they did add some good offensive pieces. So I think the offense will be better than it's been and will at least not be as boring to all creation that it has been. But I have some real questions about that defense. As good as Wade Phillips is as a coordinator, you still have to have players to pull off what you want to get done. And I'm not sure that that the players they have on defense are going to be able to be as good, and they haven't been great, but even to be as good as they've been over the last couple of seasons.
Howard Balzer joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line. You can follow him on Twitter at HBalzer721. Let's talk about that other team in Los Angeles, the Los Angeles Chargers. It still kind of sounds weird to even say, let alone even read in print. But this turf war that's going on in Los Angeles between Rams fans and Chargers fans, I really don't quite get why the Rams fans are so threatened by the mere presence of the Chargers. But do you think the Chargers, that they're really good this year, there's a good chance they can be with Phillip Rivers as their quarterback, and that team stays healthy? And we were talking about the Oakland Raiders, winning a lot of close games. The Chargers lost just as many close ones as the Raiders won. If the Chargers are good and they become a playoff team and an exciting, fun team to watch, they could win Los Angeles as far as being LA's pro team, don't you think?
Well, they can certainly gain, because what you have in LA is, you know, this whole notion that, and they tried to advance it last year with the return of the Rams. This is LA's team and all that. And there's a lot of Rams fans in LA. There's also a lot of fans of other teams, and there's a lot of fans that moved to Los Angeles in the years after, you know, the Rams left. And so there's a lot of fans to be acquired there that aren't Rams fans or Chargers fans, for that matter. And they're up for grabs, no doubt about it. And so I think that's what they're really fighting for. And so, yeah, if the Chargers are good, they can build a new fan base there that could challenge the Rams. I mean, the Rams, they did not draw well in the two preseason games. I know they're only preseason, but they still had a lot less tickets bought for these games than they did last year. And so the bloom's off the rose a little bit. So they need to win to capture those fans. And I'll tell you, they really need to win. Did you guys see the story about the PSLs there?
I did. $200,000 for the PSL. $225,000.
I've been talking about that for a year. Wait till these fans, get a hold of what these, and granted, some will say, well, the celebrities are going to buy them, and the Hollywood people, they're going to buy them. Well, Hollywood people, yeah, they'd like to go to games, but are they just going to spend their money indiscriminately just to see what's not really good football? I'm not so sure about that. And so, yeah, the price, and they're not even, from what I've heard, they're not even going to have regular tickets available for that new stadium for the Rams. It hasn't come out what the Chargers are going to charge, but all tickets for Rams games are going to be PSLs. And there'll be some that aren't ridiculously expensive, but there's going to be a whole lot of them that are in a huge stratosphere. I'll say this. The 49ers, everyone talks about, here's the funny thing. Everyone talks about how Stan Kroenke's building this stadium with his own money. Well, that's a crock. Because he's looking to try to get, not half, but probably about 30 to 40% of the cost of construction from PSL. They've budgeted. I had heard this some time ago. They had budgeted somewhere around $800 to $900 million, even close to $1 billion, that they're hoping to get from PSL sales. And to put that in perspective, the 49ers, who had decades of winning. Now, granted, they've fallen on a little bit of hard times, but the 49ers raised a little bit north of $500 million for PSLs for the new stadium for the 49ers. Well, Kroenke's looking to maybe double that. And so that's obviously a lot of money. And when they start putting out those, and that's just for the PSL, some of those $175,000, $200,000 PSLs are also going to be like $4,000 or $5,000 a game,
yeah,
just for the ticket. And so you better have a good product if you're going to expect people to pay for that.
Oh, come on, H. It's the NFL. Ticket sales don't matter. It's the ratings in L.A. that's the game all about. And when you get two teams from L.A. to play each other, you can bet that the ratings are going to carry the – wait,
I think they were like 1.4.
Hold on a second. Apparently,
they barely registered.
Apparently, they were the worst the NFL has seen in quite a long time.
And again, I don't put that much stock in that because it was a preseason game. And so, and you know, there was people in San. You think that we're crazy? You know, that people who are upset here in St. Louis. You should have heard some of the stuff being said in San Diego about the Chargers. And there are people saying how the Chargers are freaking out because they weren't getting big crowds. You know, for the preseason games, I think. Yeah, you know, they only seat 27,000 to 28,000 in that stadium, and I think they had 21,000 for one game and 18 for another. Well, I don't think that's that bad for a preseason game. And yet, there's people in San Diego going, this is already going to hell. It's already awful there. So it's just crazy. But, you know, people are going to say, you know, what they're going to say. But, you know, we have the evidence from last year with the Rams on what their ratings were on TV last year. And they obviously weren't very good. And the team was horrible. Well, let's see if those ratings increase this year. But they've got to be good. And they've got to be at least an entertaining product for people to want to watch.
Howard, I want to go back to Ezekiel Elliott. If his suspension is overturned from six games down to none, how much egg is on Roger Goodell's face? And if this is such a bad look for him, isn't it time for maybe the league and the NFLPA to get together and find a better way to discipline the players? Because Roger Goodell's pretty inept at it.
Well, you know, here's the thing. And I don't think it's getting reduced from six to none. Because what is being discussed here, and just like in the Tom Brady case, they are not retrying the case and the facts. The appeal is basically on the commissioner's power to do this. And most people who understand that part of it don't think that it will be changed. Now, the NFLPA and Elliott, I believe, have a lot of compelling arguments in this that fairness wasn't exercised in this, that obviously what's come out is that the lead investigator on the case, who was a woman, by the way, recommended no discipline because she did not think that Tiffany Thompson, who made the allegations, was credible. And yet Roger Goodell didn't interview her. He wasn't there for the Ezekiel Elliott hearing when he came in to talk. I mean, I always understood that Goodell talked to everybody when they came to New York. And yet he didn't meet with Ezekiel Elliott. And so, you know, there's some evidence about a fight that the woman was in, that Tiffany Thompson was in with someone else, and that the possibility or the likelihood, perhaps, that the injuries that she had came from this fight with someone else. And yet it seems that this evidence was ignored. And so that's, to me, why if I was Ezekiel Elliott and I, like I said, I think this suspension is going to stand. I would turn around and not waste my time going to appeals court and Supreme Court like that, because I think Tom Brady realized it was going to be a losing battle in terms of the commissioner's powers. But what I would do is I would sue Tiffany Thompson, and I would go to court on that. And no, we're not settling, because I want all the facts out in a court of law, and you have to testify and all those things, and we can have cross-examination and all that. That's what I would do. He won't get the games back, but he might get his name back if, in fact, it's shown or in court that none of this was true, what happened. And so that might be his best bet. And that ultimately, I think, would be the egg on the face of the NFL more so than anything else. Because in the way it is now, you're not going to be able to get that stuff out in a hearing in court or anything like that, because they're not hearing the evidence again. They're just, like I said, they're just ruling on the commissioner's power to basically do whatever he wants. And the thing is, you saw that egg on his face. What he's trying to do, it's all PR, but it's a very small number of players. You know, it's a very small number of players that get entrapped in this personal conduct policy that involves domestic abuse. It's a very, very small number. So even though the players have a good reason to fight it and want it different, most of the players don't want. They'd have to give up something else that would benefit all the players for something that is going to benefit a minute number of players that play in this league. I made this point the other day. there's 24 players, guys, right now, 24, that were on teams that are now suspended for a variety of different things, whether it's DEDs, personal conduct, substance abuse, whatever it might be. There are 24 players. Now, they get headlines because they did something wrong. That's the way we are in this society. But 24 players of the almost 1,700 that are right now on rosters is 1.4%. And if you throw in the practice squads and throw in guys on injured reserve, it's probably around 1%, might even be less than 1% of the players. So are the players really going to go to war for a better system that deals with and some of those 1% are guys that failed drug tests or pleaded guilty to crime, that there wasn't any question about it. And so the percentage that fall into the Ezekiel Elliott situation is even less. So are the players going to go to war for that minuscule number of players and then have to give up something, money or benefit, whatever it might be, that benefits every single player that plays? It'll never happen.
Howard, we appreciate your time this evening, sir. We look forward to hearing you. When does the new show start on Sunday? Does it start at 10 a.m.? Does it start at 9 o'clock? When does it start?
Yeah, it starts at 10 a.m., like you said, Sunday football kickoff. And we are going to be, Mark and I, I'm not sure, we might be with someone else, but we're going to be at different places around town all season. Starting this week, I mentioned last week when I came on, from the new place at Westport Plaza, Westport Social. It's an amazing, amazing place with games and unbelievable TVs and food and all kinds of things. And so that's where we're going to have our kickoff show, at Westport Social at Westport Plaza on Sunday. Their grand opening, by the way, is today. And so this is their grand opening week. And so people need to check it out. You'll just be amazed when you walk into this place and all the things there are to do, hang out, have a drink, eat, watch the games on these unbelievable wall televisions. It's really an amazing place. And like I said, that's where we will be on Sunday from 10 to 12 for the first Sunday of the NFL season.
Howard, we appreciate your time this evening, sir, and we look forward to your thoughts all season long, and really excited for you and Mark Littlebridge to be hosting the show on Sunday morning right here on 590 The Fan.
Appreciate it, guys. Take care. Have a good one.
Thanks, Howard. I have a couple of texts coming in from the 618 saying, quit talking the NFL. You people are cuckolds. You were married into the Bush family. She cheated all over the world on you, and her family helped screw you in the divorce. You morons would still drink Bud Light and go after her cousins. Well, 618, I've got good news and bad news for you. The bad news is that we are still going to talk about the NFL on the show for as long as we're on the air. The good news is that we're coming up next. We'll be talking college football with Danny Jones and the Columbia Daily Tribune. Yes, sir?
Letting Stan Kroenke and Roger Goodell take away my favorite sport simply because they're a bunch of no-class jackwagons. That's letting the terrorists win.
That's a good way to put it.
I love football.
Yes.
Football has been my favorite sport since I was about 10 years old and realized I liked it a lot better than anything else I was playing in school. Football's the best sport in the world. No holds bar, and I'm not going to let those idiots ruin it for me.
I felt like the 618 did, like soon after they made the announcement the Rams are going back to Los Angeles.
I questioned my job because I had people who were telling me that by just doing my job, I was helping enrich the NFL.
Well, this is all it took was that NFL playoff game between the Cardinals and the Packers that went into overtime. Aaron Rodgers had that Hail Mary to tie the game, and then Carson Palmer hit Larry Fitzgerald on that slant to win the game, and that's all it took for me to fall right back in love with the NFL. I'll admit I'm a weak man, damn it, but I love my football. Don't try to take it away from me. First hour of the program is brought to you by Thomas Baxton American Family Insurance, 314-298-7770. Call now. Mention that 590 show and get a $10 gift card just running a quote. Coming up on the other side of the break on the Belbin Automotive phone line will be Danny Jones from the Columbia Daily Tribune talking about the Tigers' first game on Saturday against Missouri State in their upcoming contest against South Carolina. You're listening to that 590 show right here on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM and InsideSTL.com.